Hello, and welcome to The Least Ready Room, a podcast about Star Trek, where we're going to watch every episode and piece of media regarding Star Trek and probably read some comics. And boy, maybe it's time to start thinking about the novels, of which there are a bajillion. We don't know. Reading material is, for now, we're watching TV. For now, this is a TV show review recap podcast, but if I consume any of those other things, I'll talk about them. And I feel like, you know, we do book discussion on you know, my Discord, where all of this begins. So yeah, reading Star Trek novels is certainly not off the table. But for now, today is a beautiful, it's very warm. I broke down and put my air conditioning in the window last night. Every year, boy, this one was quick. Every year I try to see how long. And this year I was like, fuck it. I don't feel like being in an endurance contest to see how long I can endure being sweaty. Because there is something nice and natural about sitting around in the summer. It's not even summer. It's hot right now. Although it's cooling off today. So it's fine. The air conditioner is in the window. That doesn't mean it has to be turned on. And I don't know. And really, it's just a game. It became a game with me. See how long I can not put the air conditioner in the window for. So it's not turned on. It's in the window. It's not like I'm worried about losing heat because there's a little bit of extra ventilation there. So, yeah. So welcome to almost summertime in New England, where we're talking about Star Trek. Today we are talking to Chris and Saint. Weebs might be here. Boy, I never know. I never, like, you know, and I could, like, check. I could make sure I know who is on. That honestly should be in the doc, who was there for the viewing. So this is one whole conversation breakdown of our viewing of Balance of Terror, and maybe it will come up. I hope it comes up when we're talking, because I also could have researched this. If the answer to this question doesn't come up, I will cut in and provide it. But the Balance of Terror is, I believe, based on a short story about submarines, which led to our conversation on Discord about the idea of a backdoor adaptation, you know, which is where mostly everything is completely changed, but it's still, you know, Dante's Inferno or whatever. And that's the question of the week. So we will be talking about the idea of backdoor adaptations at the end of this. And if it is not said, because I believe maybe that we're going to talk about it. And Weebs is here. I think that The Hunt for Red October may also be based on the same short story that Balance of Terror is based on. But yeah, if we don't explicitly say what that short story is, I'll look it up and weigh in the middle. Other than that, yeah, the question of the week is going to be a funny one. We'll get to that at the very end as well. But let me see if I can... It's, yeah, you and your colleagues, while investigating supernatural phenomena, have come across an old god at the top of a Manhattan high-rise, and the old god demands that you choose. Does she say choose and die or something, or choose and perish? Anyway, she demands that you choose. One of your colleagues, I'm going to have to tighten this up, one of your colleagues realizes that, and this never made sense to me, I don't know how he figures this out, but it's the first thing you think of. Don't think of anything, because the first thing you think of is what is going to destroy Manhattan. And the question of the week is, how is Manhattan destroyed? Because we're all going to think of something, right? So, yeah, I'm glad that I worked that out a little bit, and I'll put that together. So it's Monday, Yeah, I think that I decided on the other podcast I announced this, but maybe we'll talk. We'll come out on Fridays. The Least Ready Room will come out on Mondays. And the question of the week will always be in Discord. And you can get a link to my Discord and all of my stuff at koyadk.com.tv. koyadk.tv. And check out lakehousesoaps.com to buy soap from me and support this whole circus. And come talk to us on Discord. And yeah, so here is welcome to Saint, Weebs, and Chris. I'm Dave. To Balance of Terror. Thanks for joining us. All right, so that's Saint's favorite episode. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Mark Leonard as the Romulan commander. Whoa. And that is, of course, Sarek. Yeah, look
that's
at that bird
old,
of prey.
That's the old warbird.
That's Baylock.
That's Baylock.
Yeah, I don't know why they're showing him.
This is the outro credits that they have now.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
They changed the outro credits at a certain point, and this is what they show. They always have the
That becomes there, always. Oh yeah, that actually.
Yeah,
looked,
I don't think we watch the credits usually. I think that's part of the problem. I think we usually skip them.
I think that is part of the problem, is I usually do, yeah.
Yeah, no, those are the normal outro credits.
So yeah, Conscious
but
of
I think
King.
We noticed the warbird, and then...
Oh, man, I love the Conscious of the King so much, too. It's a Shakespeare fucking episode. I'm gonna hit my vape real quick, and then come back, and we can talk about
cool.
The balance.
Cool. Maybe I'll smoke a tiny little bowl and get a drink. Remind me to ask you about the... Actually, I mean, do you want to tell me the facts before I get up, Chris? Or do you want to remind...
I can wait we get back and do the...
Let's not forget about them.
I won't. I'm sober.
Oh, good. Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome of you.
Yeah, I usually am when we do the podcast, because otherwise I'll just fall asleep and won't pay attention to the episode.
I usually am, but not Friday nights, generally.
Yeah,
At least so far, that doesn't seem to be...
As soon as we're done, I've got brownies upstairs waiting, but I won't be high during these. Otherwise, I can't pay attention. I'm gonna make a cup of tea though, so I'll be a couple minutes.
Forever.
Well, that's not my fault, bud. You should reconsider life choices.
You guys ever seen any Tony Jaa movies?
Yes.
No.
God, I love him.
He's good.
Although good. I feel like maybe. I feel like I just don't, I'm not, yeah.
The two classic ones that he did in the 2000s or something. Or the
2010s. Ong Bak.
Ong Bak and The Protector. Mm-hmm. And The Protector.
I never saw The Protector. Okay. I saw Ong Bak. I used to have that on an illegal DVD back in the day.
Yeah,
there's three of them, eh?
They made more. The later ones were not as good, but it's okay.
Apparently an expensive.
Guy, yeah, probably. I stopped watching the Expendables movies. The guy who plays the Mandalorian, not Pedro Pascal. The guy who plays the Mandalorian and like who wears the suit.
Not Aquaman's dad.
Not Pedro Pascal. But like when it comes to the actual acting, like with the helmet on and doing all the stunts and everything, there's two stuntmen who wear it, and one of them was an Ong Bak. One of them is the capoeira guy from Ong Bak.
Okay.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
Yeah.
No, we quote Ong Bak all the time because of Mad Dog.
Yeah.
That just comes up constantly in our household. It's one of the echolalias of choice, you know what I mean?
Nice. Yeah, Ong Bak is a good movie. The Tony Jaa has some good fighting scenes, and then his crew, the crew that do the, like all the fighting scenes with him. Oh, no, wait, no, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of something else. I'm thinking of those Indonesian guys that did the raid.
Oh yeah,
the Indonesian guys who did the raid did like a bunch of the fight scenes and stuff in the Star Wars sequel trilogy. And they had cameos in the first Star Wars movie, in Force Awakens, as those criminals who come to like get Han and Chewie.
It's been too long. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, and they're literally on screen for like about like 3 seconds, and they're shouting at Han to like give him the money, basically.
Okay. I was talking about how I should watch those again, and I should both sets, anyway. The prequels and the sequels, I'm going to watch them again. I feel like I used to watch them. I've definitely watched them more than 5 times or so. So yeah, what's going on and what episode is this, Chris?
So this was episode 14, Balance of Terror, directed by Vincent McEvee. We've had this name before. I didn't like it. The guy who did Miri and Dagger of the Mind, Vincent McEvity.
Okay. McEvity? McEvity?
I don't know.
We've done this whole routine before.
We did. Okay. McEvety. McEvity, I'm guessing, but I don't know. And Paul Schneider was the writer. It originally aired December 15th, 1966, with an 8.8 out of 10 on IMDb.
And it is Saint's favorite episode, and it's up. It's a good. I mean,
this was a good episode. Yeah,
this was the first real action-packed one. If it wasn't really the first spaceship to spaceship battle, this was the first where like the whole episode is spaceship battles. Yeah.
And for a spaceship to spaceship battle, the special effects are actually kind of light.
Yeah,
and. You know, I was thinking to myself, because I've seen the original one so many times, I'm like, oh, what's the remastered one going to look like when it comes to the special effects for like the space battle? But it really did not look all that different. Like it's definitely like remastered. You know, it looks better.
Yeah,
no question. But they didn't fancy it up too much. Like the plasma ball effect, like coming at the ship and everything like that. You know, it's pretty similar.
Yeah, it looked really interesting. It looked like they filmed like some kind of maybe glass container filled with smoke and then, you know, added a red filter and had it look like it was like billowing smoke hurtling towards the ship.
Yeah, a little bit. Something like that.
Yeah, I liked it.
That's kind of the effect there is like enveloping plasma that like burns everything away.
It sucks the strength out of your galvanized adamantium or whatever you're holding.
Castrodinium.
Yeah. And then Spock could just crush it with his hands.
Yep. Then you can just peel it off. Yeah, so did Spock, like, was Spock down in the teleporter room? Like, Scotty, grab me a piece of that space station so I can bring it upstairs to Kirk and show how I can crush it.
What?
I don't think so, Koya.
You don't think that's why he had a piece of it?
No, I think they probably took some of it in to analyze it to see what the hell happened, because, I mean, it's a that they haven't seen before, right? So they're trying to understand what's happening with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But no, crushing with his hand is part of the end result of that. He's like, look, I can be dramatic and show off at the staff meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, good episode overall.
Yeah, good episode overall.
A lot of fun.
They introduced the Romulans.
First time Romulans.
Perennial bad guys. Space Romans smashing their chests with their fists and wearing toga-looking armor things and trying to conquer the galaxy.
Calling each other Centurion.
Centurion and
I kept thinking about how the Warbird was a bird in decal only, like how Pontiac had a Firebird.
Yeah,
hey,
yeah,
yeah.
But that style says that, you know, at the beginning of the episode, he's like, you recognize the Romulan ship because they paint them up like a bird of prey.
Yeah,
like a giant bird of prey.
Did they stop painting them by TNG?
They're still green in TNG.
But they didn't have a bird painted on them.
The Deridex class with the cool like cutout middle
and the
cutout middle part. Yeah. They didn't, it looked like from the top down it looked kind of like bird like with like the wings kind of like spread forward. But they didn't paint the bird on it like they did with this one.
I felt like the uniforms.
It looks like some of what they've done too is rather than it just being painted, they actually with the decor, like the way that the metals have been put together, have created almost wing like feather like look to the wings as well.
Oh, on the TNG one?
Yeah, and it's online. That. Yeah, confirming it.
Like, if you like zoom into the detail on the.
Yeah, it looks almost like feathers on the edge of the wing, like the backside of them too, the way they have it on a bird.
Nice.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
I thought the uniforms looked pretty comparable to the TNG uniform. At least, maybe it's just the checkers, but I at least kind of felt like.
And it's the toga like sash thing that.
They have a sash in TNG. They get more square in TNG. They have like
they have big puffed out like eighties shoulders.
Yeah, no, and they didn't have the sash. They had the necklace piece, like a Y piece.
You're right.
I'm looking it up to confirm on the internet.
You're right. And the necklace piece. And the necklace piece almost resembled like sort of like medieval or Renaissance like kind of necklaces like you'd wear like chains of office kind of thing.
Yeah, and from what I'm seeing, it looks like there's different colors which may denote rank, the way pips denote it for Starfleet. But okay. I don't have anything to really prove it, but like I'm seeing, for example, when Troy's dressed up as a one, she's got like two straps on one shoulder and then one on the other side. Whereas with Yard, just one on either side coming across to the breast.
How come Troy gets turned into a Romulan?
I don't remember that happening very well.
There was some episode where they make her look like a Romulan, and because
they also do it to Kira also, but not a Romulan. Do they try to trick Kira into believing she's a Cardassian?
Maybe. Oh my God, you're right. I forgot about how wide those shoulders are.
They get a real big square checkerboard uniforms. Yeah. Okay. Maybe. Yeah.
They're a little less Roman styled, but they're definitely like they're still leaning on the bird thing because those chest sashes definitely have a real sort of like
avian type of personality going on.
Kind of thing.
Well, one of the other things I've noticed if you look at Sarek versus like these images here, especially the one of Troy where you can see her forehead more, they've cut back. So they added more ridging and stuff. They really tried to separate them out from the Vulcans in appearance a lot more in TNG.
They
have more head ridges as Vulcans.
Sharper head ridges, different shaped eyebrows, slightly different shaped eyebrows, and then the outfits are very different too.
And it's the kind of thing that makes sense. It's like long periods of a population in isolation and developed.
Well, I mean, they did the same thing with the Klingons, right?
Not
exactly. Well, from a
production standpoint, did explain it away differently in the show, but
in Romulans, they never bothered to explain it. They just started adding more and more ridges and started to differentiate them. As far as I know, and then the Romulans in the TNG movies were like really weird, weren't they?
They had the Remans as well, which didn't help.
Oh no, it was the Remans I'm thinking of.
Which was what they had in the remake too. It was Remans who killed, wasn't it? Remans that killed Spock's planet?
No, you're right. I'm thinking of the Remans now.
Eric Bana? Was Eric Bana a Reman?
I think so. Yeah, okay. I think the remake was Remans, not Romulan specifically. Okay. Whereas in Nemesis, it was Remans, not Romulans too.
Yeah, they. They sent mutagenic gas to disintegrate the Romulan Senate or whatever. Who was the actor? Who was that young man that played Picard's clone? Tom Hardy. Do you know that role like almost destroyed his career? Like
I'm not surprised. It was a shitty movie.
Depressed for 8 years, like terrible, like almost destroyed him completely.
Like, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that he should have had his career destroyed over, but I'm not surprised that's what happened, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not surprised it took that toll on him, yeah.
Yeah, well, again, it was a shitty role on a shitty movie.
He was, like, 20.
Yeah, and, like, it's, like, I think it's one of his first big roles that he did, too, right?
Yeah, like, maybe the first, like, actual movie role, yeah.
Yeah.
No, apparently he did Black Hawk Down, Deserter, and that's before it.
Black Hawk Down was before Nemesis?
The year before. So he did Black Countdown in 2001, then Deserter, and then Nemesis were both in 2002. And he had a couple of TV roles before that as well. Or shorts. I mean, two shorts and a TV.
Okay.
But yeah, no, it's one of his first times out there. That's what he put out. I can see why Hollywood was a bit hesitant, right? Like, it wasn't a good resume to be producing for that. But he came back from it, which is good, because, like, he is solid, you know?
And oh, he's great. I think he's very entertaining.
Very good actor, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and it would have sucked if that was the end of it. Like, I mean, I think he's one of the better Venoms we've had, kind of thing, you know what I mean? So.
You think he was better than Eric Corbin?
Oh, for Grace? Yes.
So you know what happened to the Romulans after Tom Hardy came by and disintegrated their Senate?
No.
Their sun went supernova.
Oh, that's right.
They're basically off the table at this point in Star Trek.
The Romulans had their shit pushed in.
Completely destroyed.
Terrible natural disasters.
Yeah, and it was a big deal that the Federation, like, did not do very much to help them evacuate.
No.
That's Picard season one that we're talking about.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, it's kind of hard to blame them.
The Federation? Look at this. These guys were flying around nuking Federation outposts.
They love to stab people in the back.
But
they love it.
It's because you're good at it.
Favorite fucking thing to do. It's like, you know, it's like that story of the scorpion and the frog.
Yes.
You know, the scorpion goes to the frog. Hey, I need to get on the other side of this river, so why don't you let me hop on your back and carry me to the other side of the river? And the frog goes, you think I'm stupid? You're a fucking scorpion. You're going to sting me. He's like, I'm not going to sting you. That would be stupid on my part, because then I would drown in the middle of the river. And the frog is like, okay, you got a good point. Scorpion climbs onto the back of the frog. Frog starts to swim across. Halfway across the river, scorpion stings the frog. Frog's like, what the fuck did you do that for? Now we're both going to die. Scorpion's like, sorry, I can't help it. It's just my nature.
Yeah, Chakotay tells that story.
Yeah. The Romulans love that shit.
Yeah,
Romulan and they'd be like,
They're totally honest about it. They're not honest about anything other than their nature.
Other than the fact
their
that
nature is to be dishonest.
They love lying and stabbing you in the back.
They're like Vulcans, except they'll tell you that they're assholes.
Yeah.
I don't really, in this episode, what could possibly be their motivation to cross the neutral zone and start frying out?
They're testing the cloaking device and the plasma gun.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They say it right from the beginning. And then that's pretty much what Spock is also saying is they're always testing everyone around them. And if they sense it is like required that they go for the kill. Like they have a sort of like twisted version of the Vulcan logic, an extremely violent, militaristic, authoritarian version of it that goes like, well, if I can kick your fucking ass, then you have to be my slave.
Mm-hmm.
If you can kick my ass, then I guess I gotta be your slave, but you're not kicking my ass, so.
They get their asses kicked in this episode.
Eventually they get their asses kicked in this episode.
And eventually as a race.
Eventually as a race, but you know, in TNG, they steal this shit for the first TNG episode where they show the Romulans come back.
Yeah.
Asteroid outposts along the neutral zone getting blown up.
Do they use the like exact same line?
I forget. No, they don't use the same lines.
But the one line about in another universe we would have been friends, that shows up in at least like two or three other episodes.
Oh yeah, that's
like that's what that people Star Trek likes putting that in the script.
Yeah. The whole thing about this script too is that it is a remake, it's derivative from a movie and a novel called The Enemy Below.
Oh.
About World War II battle between a Allied destroyer and a Nazi submarine.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
In the novel, it's a British ship, and in the movie, it's an American ship, because it's an American movie. But they made this movie in, like, the 50s or something. It was, like, probably came out, like, 10 years or something before this, 9 years before this. So, very similar plot line, apparently. We've said it. I didn't even need to know that it was written on this book to know that it was a submarine battle. This is kind of a submarine warfare kind of thing. The cloaking device makes it so that they can go under the surface. They can vanish, you know, from easy detection. I mean, they can still get detected, obviously.
Yep.
Yeah. There's, you know, the Enterprise chases them and can get close and, like, starts bombarding them, even though it can't quite hit them.
Figures out a couple different things it can do, chase them through the gas tail of a comet.
Yeah.
Trying to be quiet in the dark.
Yeah. Shut down the whole ship and sit in the dark, go into stealth mode. Yeah, and whisper to each other. And then someone's cell phone goes off. Oops. I got a text. You should have set it to airplane mode.
Someone starts singing the Soviet national anthem.
Is that what happens in the novel?
No. I'm thinking
Hunt for Red October. I think they do something like that.
You know what? Know something? I've never seen that movie.
Never seen that movie? Oh, that's a good submarine movie.
Yeah, it's got James Bond in it. This is the first time we've seen
and or Sam heard of Neill.
And Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
right. And Darth
Han
Vader.
Solo. And Darth Vader, too?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Remember when Darth Vader... Sorry?
Hunt for October is action-packed. You should watch it.
I've never seen it either.
Wow, maybe we should watch it then. I'll find out if we can get it streaming somewhere or something. Because, yeah.
It's hilarious that Sean Connery does not even bother to try to do a Russian accent when everyone around him.
Yeah, oh, he's a Russian. Sean Connery's playing a Russian. I mean, I think someone should have told me that
because like 10 minutes, and then they all speak English.
Okay, of course, right? Yeah,
there's this thing, yeah, where they're all speaking Russian for a while, and then it like sort of transitions to them speaking English, and then they're all speaking English. Or maybe there's a reason. It's like they all start saying, like, okay, well, we all have to start speaking English now because we're going to be defecting to the West, so we need to... Or something maybe. Like that. Something like that. Something like that. Or either that or it's
I mean, it's like there's plenty of movies where they just, you know, they set you up with whatever language it's going to be, and then they just switch to English after 5 minutes just like a movie,
I think that's what...
I think that's what they do, actually. Yeah. I think it's that.
Definitely in actually, the 80s and 90s.
It's an 80s movie. And you know what? It is that. And then they switch back to Russian for like a hot second when the Russians and the Americans come into contact.
Or on the same screen. Yeah.
Yeah, when they're back on this, when they're in the same place together and the Russians and the Americans are together and the Americans go, hey, what's up? And the Russians go...
At that point, you gotta,
you know, they're like, stole. I don't know, yeah. Anyway. Yeah, Balance of Terror. 10 out of 10.
Back on topic.
10 out of 10 Saint.
No notes.
All right.
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised. Your 10 out of 10 was your favorite episode, too, so.
Yeah.
I'll give this a 9. I'm still not doing halves, right? Or have I done a half?
I think you've debated about doing halves or not, man. Just
I have a half. I don't.
I'm just gonna do whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah, I do have no halves. I've got a couple of halves.
Add a few decimal points if you want to. Give it an 8 point. Give it a 9.234 if you want.
I'm comfortable with a solid 9.
It's your rating system.
I mean, shit. You know what? No, give it a 10. I like this. This was action packed.
I'll give this a 9 as well. It's solid.
It's got a 10 for me.
It's got good action. It's got good.
It had.
It's got like a flow to the story. It's got like a good pacing. Like there's spots where it stops to like sort of like think about things.
Yep.
Give the characters time to sort of like be tense, Spock crush something. They have a impassioned discussion about like, do we attack or do we not attack? Do we risk like this big ass war?
Yeah.
Like if we don't attack, is it more of a risk of war?
Because what do we know about our enemy?
What do we know about them?
Nothing.
And then Spock is speculating. Like Spock. They look like Spock. Spock's like, oh shit, that's worse if they look like us, because that means he's like, I know what that means. It means that they're evil Vulcans, yeah, man, and that's worse.
Yep.
Yeah.
Definitely the first time we've heard of a cloaking system or a invisibility screen, as Kirk first referred to it.
Yeah, it's very novel technology.
This has some great, I don't know if I've said it while we've been recording, but this has some great, everybody fling yourself against the wall or over a chair or over the console. It has three or four really good people flinging themselves around while lights and sparks go off.
When the outpost gets destroyed,
really good.
Real
dramatic acting.
Throws his head back while still like hanging on to the console in front of him.
Like, yeah, he's being electrocuted. Like his hands are stuck. Like really great performances out of that.
Kind of like open in pain.
Yeah. People screaming and getting blown up and fried all over the place.
Everybody hurling themselves left and right. Like stuff falling from the ceiling all the time in the Romulan ship.
Weebs, what do you have? You got a number?
I'm at like an 8, I think.
Cool. Yeah, this is a good one.
All around. Solid episode.
I like it. And just to not necessarily to wrap it up, but in case anyone is concerned about the overall arc of the Romulans, since we've covered just about everything else, in Discovery, as you guys, I think we've talked about this. After season 2, they go into the Stardate 3000 or something. The year 3000. Or they go like 1,000 years into the future. And by then, the Romulans and Vulcans have settled together on a planet called Navarre and rejoined and become one race. Okay.
Nice.
Thank you.
It wasn't really spoilers, but...
Nonetheless, as soon as you say Discovery, not like episode 3...
Yeah.
Cool. Headphones off. Let's avoid more spoilers.
I mean, I feel like you might. There's a really huge change after the second season. I don't know if you know. That's not. Yeah. You'll watch it eventually. We'll watch it.
Yeah. No. I'm down.
Well, not talking about Discovery at all, but just in general, saying like, wow, the Vulcans and the Romulans get their ship blown up a lot.
Yes. I mean,
Vulcan gets destroyed in the alternate reality continuity.
Is Winona Ryder on the planet when it gets destroyed?
Yes. Yeah,
Winona Ryder gets killed.
Jesus. That's terrible.
She gets eaten with all the other billions of
gets destroyed by Reavans.
Yeah.
Terrible. What was he so mad about?
He was so mad about the Federation not helping the Reavans.
Spock blew up at their ship, their planet, or whatever. And
Spock
blew up their
planet.
Yeah, Spock's. They blamed Spock for blowing up their planet, so they were blowing up his. So he knew what it felt like, or something to that effect.
That sounds familiar.
But he didn't blow up their planet, though. Not really.
I wonder how.
I think he was trying to stop their planet from getting blown up, and he failed.
Oh, sure, and they were like, well, or at least Eric Bana was like.
They were like, Eric Bana was like, that's as good as actually doing it.
It's something to that effect, though.
But, okay.
Wow, yeah, Starfleet gets shit on a lot for not hauling the Romulans out of their own fucking problems.
Yeah, for real.
Starfleet's two hands off for a lot of cultures, because like, I mean, there's a lot of issues around the Vulcans, a lot of issues around the Klingons that they just are like, not our species, not our problem.
They're like, we want to be altruistic, but we can only be so altruistic. Like,
they covered it nicely. I thought with the Jem'Hadar and the stuff in the Delta Quadrant with like Janeway, where she got to really have to put that to test rather than like the crap that gets pulled in the Alpha Quadrant, right? Where they can just do whatever they want. Like yeah, the Alpha Quadrant, the Starfleet people are a lot more hand-tied because they're actually being monitored. Whereas in the Delta Quadrant, there's Janeway could do whatever because like nobody's going to tell her no, right?
Yeah, which she that was the advantage that she could ignore the Prime Directive and do whatever she wanted. She also had no backup.
Yeah.
Are there any episodes where anybody tries to court-martial Janeway?
No.
They really should. The closest there was
that I can remember was Janeway was the timeline police. I don't remember what
the time police come and try to get her a couple times.
Yeah, so. And that's the closest that I can think of.
I'm pretty sure she blows up the time cop's ship and strands him in like 1998.
Because some admirals definitely go after some crew members of both the Enterprises.
Yeah.
And probably Sisko and DS9 people too. There's definitely
people
who are like, all right, now it's time.
Sisko is a fucking war criminal.
Like, this is a fucking, now it's time for a courtroom episode in Star Trek, guys. Courtroom episode.
Yeah, exactly.
There's multiple, but not in Voyager.
I mean,
there's nothing getting her back. She could do whatever.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure the TOS crew all get court-martialed and they all get demoted in Search for Spock or maybe even Voyage Home when they finally get home.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And they're like, you killed a bunch of Klingons and stole a Klingon ship and almost started a war with the Klingon Empire, and then you broke a bunch of time travel laws, and it was to save the Earth, which is cool, but still.
But we're going to demote you for funsies, so you're all in your original roles, and now you can go blow up God and then have one final romp with the Klingons after that. And that'll be the good one. We told Shatner he could direct one.
He told Shatner he could blow up God.
That's what he wanted to do.
And Voyager, doesn't Red Foreman have a ship that changes history?
Yes. Yes, that man's name is Anorax. Wow, multiple Foreman family references in one episode. Look at that. It might be like he might have more of a name than that. But yeah, that's the week of hell or the year of hell or whatever. It's a two-parter. Yeah, any final thoughts or anything? What happened? Why did the phaser coolant leak? Were they sabotaged or did
They were burning out their shit. Stuff breaks in TOS a lot more than it does in the TNG era.
It breaks a lot in the TNG era.
But you get the feeling in TNG era that it breaks. They're breaking stuff a lot because their stuff is so fucking cutting edge,
right?
That it hasn't been tested enough, and they're pushing the envelope on this stuff. They're like, you know, LaForge is down there in fucking engineering, going like,
performing miracles.
What's the tolerances on this? Okay, can I get it within 99.99 percentile of those tolerances and still make it work?
Yeah.
Because otherwise the Borg are going to kill us all, you know, doing his thing. But like in TNG, TOS, I always get the idea that it's just like their tech is all
burning out.
It's all this clunky shit and they're just like smashing so much power through it that it's just... Everything is getting fucked up all the time. It's like I said, the difference in special effects is when stuff breaks in TOS, there's fire and smoke.
Yep. Yeah. Smoke.
When stuff breaks in TNG, it's like showers of sparks.
Yeah.
It's just like a different aesthetic.
There's always smoke poured out of consoles in the wall in TOS.
Yeah.
I think part of that is also thinking, like keeping in mind what the technology of the era looked like.
This is what advanced technology looked like to people in the 60s.
Yeah, and in the 60s, most technology, when it got fugged, it smoked, it fired, and you ran away. Whereas in the 80s and 90s, oh, look, it's broken. I've got a bricked computer in front of me now.
Yeah.
Maybe sparks, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And if things were really fucked up, you might see some sparks. Yeah.
So it really is just them... drawing on real life for what they're producing, which is makes perfect sense. Like sci-fi is just current stuff but slightly fancier, right? So
yeah.
Are we still in 1966?
Yeah. This was December.
All right, we're almost there. We're almost out of 66.
This was December 15th. Next episode, Shore Leave, is our last December, like our last 1966 episode that aired December 29th of 1966.
When did this start? Like Star Trek year-wise? I mean, like where in the year?
Mantrap came out September 8th.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've done, this has been the fall of 66.
Yeah.
What was going on in the real world in the fall of 66, I wonder?
So Google.
Calendar year 1966.
It wasn't quite time for Woodstock. There was some Vietnaming going on.
So September 8th, the first Star Trek show airs.
That's the most important thing that happened in 1966.
the Severn Bridge was officially opened by Queen Elizabeth.
Okay.
Let's see. Lyndon Johnson is responding to Charles Whitman about a sniper attack at the U of T in Austin.
Oh.
Okay. Chevy Camaro came out with the Panther around then too. Like it was originally the Panther and became the Camaro according to the internet.
Oh.
Yeah.
The Camaro.
In October, we've got Botswana and Lesotho joining the UN.
Okay.
Yeah. The Vietnam War, Binh Thai and Dien Nien. Oh, I do not speak Vietnamese, but a couple of massacres happened.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. October 6th, LSD is made illegal in the United States.
Illegal? In 1966?
Yeah. It was legal
before. Yeah, I mean, why would it? No one had heard of it. Yeah.
Barbados joined the UN that year, too. NASA launched Gemini 12. The Cave of Swallows was discovered in the end of December of that year.
The what?
Cave of Swallows. It's a very famous, very large cave shaft in Mexico.
Oh. It's got birds?
No, if I remember correctly, it's just a deadly one.
Oh, it swallows people whole?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot. Wow, the Cave of Swallows. Jesus.
Look, apparently this list is just like negative events.
The Camaro, one of the worst things that happened in history.
The first Kwanzaa, though, was celebrated that year, too.
Okay, happy Kwanzaa.
Yeah.
What else happened in that year?
I'm just looking from like September 8th until like the end of the year, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of disasters. It looks like just Cold War stuff and Vietnam War, couple space racy things.
Yeah. That sounds like about what was happening.
Yeah. Nothing jumps out as particularly interesting for that year.
Except that Star Trek began.
Yeah. And apparently it's important enough to put on the list of things that happened in 1966.
I think so. Let me say thank you to all three of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Thanks for talking about it. Yeah, the Romulans.
Wow, Montreal opened its subway system.
Oh?
Fuck yeah.
Mass transit.
Yeah, 1966, October 14th, it inaugurated the metro, and the 17th it opened.
All right.
Sorry, there's a specific list for Canada.
Does Montreal have a wall around it?
No. You're thinking of Quebec City. We talked about that before.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like in the 90s, one time in high school, we were playing Vampire, and someone described to me that Montreal had a big wall around it, and I think that's stuck in my head ever since then.
No, it's Quebec City's Quebec City has the wall. Yeah. Montreal is an island.
Oh, okay.
They might have added the wall in World of Darkness.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense. I mean, it's World of Darkness. Everything needs a wall.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about how World of Darkness, the cities in World of Darkness are different from the real life cities, like how like Chicago has fucking trolley cars still in it.
And like underground like shopping centers, and stuff. Yeah.
Other fun fact: apparently, 1966 is when Kiefer Sutherland was born.
Oh, cool. We just watched him in Twin Peaks Fire Walk with Me.
I'm not surprised.
Kiefer
Sutherland? Do you know Donald Sutherland from Hunger Games?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, his son. His son.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just thinking. Yeah.
I think he's in, what was it, 24 he starred in?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's his, yeah.
No, I'm thinking of Lost Boys.
Yeah, he, yeah, where he was a vampire.
He might have been in that. I actually never saw Lost Boys.
Oh!
Lost Boys is a good vampire. Well, that's a good
age. That's like, vampire. It's like, boy, that's, man, if I was going to make a list of vampire movies, it would be on there.
Yeah, as far as for me, formative vampire movies, like Lost Boys is up there.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It was something I never saw. There's a lot of 1990s, like, sorry, 80s media, like Goonies and stuff like that, too.
You've never seen Goonies?
Nope.
What the fuck? Dude, have you seen Labyrinth?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay.
I've seen Labyrinth repeatedly.
I didn't see Goonies. I honestly did not see Goonies until I was like 17 or 18 years old or something.
Did I make
like
you watch it?
No, not you. It was somebody
else. I loved
though.
That movie. I watched that movie over and over again my whole.
Yeah, Dark Crystal and Labyrinth. Chaos is a massive Jim Henson's fan. I couldn't be in this relationship and not.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
To put in context, I had not seen either of them until I started seeing him, and then when he found out, he took me to Walmart that night to buy them, so good. He could bring like the DVDs good. Home to watch both of them. So
yeah, you have to have seen Labyrinth. I mean, that's yeah. people need to see Labyrinth.
Yes, it's a good movie.
It's the fucking law.
One of Candace's best friends, actually, the first year she had her son, she dressed the son up as the baby and herself as Jareth for Halloween.
Good.
Yeah,
I seriously had my college roommate seriously spent so much time learning how to do the fucking hand.
Oh my god, really?
Oh, it's so pretty.
He spent so much time learning how to do it, and he was doing it for a while. He would fucking walk it. He'd be like fucking walking around New York City, like practicing that shit. I think I remember him telling me that he dropped it on the subway track one time, and he had to like fucking check to make sure he wasn't gonna get run over and jump down on the track to grab it. He wasn't going to leave it. And he was like, my fucking crystal ball. It was like an acrylic or something like that.
Yeah.
the guy who did it, like the actual juggler, had his face like right next to David Bowie's junk.
And yeah, Bowie felt like real close to each other.
Well, Bowie felt so bad.
His arm.
Yeah, Bowie felt so bad for it that he put potpourri down his pants so that everything would smell nice for the guy.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
And David Bowie famously was wearing serious pants in that.
He was not wearing a codpiece.
Yeah, no, I know. That's what I'm saying. He was wearing serious pants. He was wearing it doesn't leave much the imagination.
No, not a thing. But no, the joke has always been it's David Bowie's codpiece. It's like no, he's gone on record. No codpiece. It's just that's just him.
That's David Bowie's junk. Yeah, no, I didn't think it was a codpiece.
We also watched David Bowie in Fire Walk With Me.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
He's in it for 30 seconds.
Much balance, so terror.
Yeah, man. So that was that. That was
balance, terror. I don't know why they would call it balance, terror.
I was thinking about that.
No, I can see it, because you're the two sides are balancing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're both afraid of each other. They're both trying to beat the other one. Like, I can see it.
Yeah, they're just, wow. I love the names of the episodes of
series.
They're all so fucking over the top.
City on the Edge of Forever. That's it's so good that they named a South Park episode that for no reason at all.
A Taste of Armageddon.
Yeah, I like that one.
I can't wait.
That one I remember, yeah.
That's another 10 out of 10 episode.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that one again.
Yeah, that's near the end of this season, though, so you got a bunch more to watch.
Yeah, we'll watch, coming up, we're gonna watch The Menagerie, and then, and if you want to watch the Shakespeare one, Conscience of the King, that doesn't have to do with Q, does it?
There's no, a guy Q that doesn't, people Q doesn't Tremaine. Come out until far.
Yeah,
far,
but there's a.
This there, is still a god. Yeah, it's a guy. It's a guy who thinks he's a god.
Yeah, is his name Tremaine?
I don't remember.
It doesn't. It certainly doesn't matter right now. I don't think that's Conscience of the King.
No, Conscience of the King doesn't have any any space gods in it. Okay.
No, it's an actor suspected of having been a mass murdering dictator 20 years earlier.
Whoa, I remember. Yep. All right. Okay.
No, cool. That one's not a space god. It's like, what if Hitler were hiding as an actor?
Yep. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember most of these. Some of them I feel like I have not, seen since.
I feel like I've not seen that one. As much that as I'm sure I've seen every Star Trek episode, I'm pretty sure this is the first time I've seen Balance of Terror.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. We didn't even talk about poor Mr. Tomlinson, who...
Fuck Tomlinson, don't get married.
Wedding is interrupted by Romulans, and...
And then he's killed.
And then he chokes on phaser coolant.
The only casualty on the Federation side, anyway, of the battle
is the guy that's going to get married today.
It's like they're sending out a message of like, don't be in space doing fights on your wedding day. Like, maybe just don't get married while you're out there. You know,
wait
till you.
But the two of them were like, we cannot wait.
Yeah,
we need to get down and dirty. Like.
I don't think you need to be married to get down and dirty, guys.
Maybe they
had 1966.
Maybe they had some strong kind of thing. I don't know.
Adam Sandler was born the day after The Man Trap came out.
Oh.
Nice. Sorry, I'm still scrolling through the list of events from 1966.
Oh yeah, that's on the events.
Yeah, September 9th, Adam Sandler, American actor, comedian. A couple massacres,
the Camaro, Star Trek, Adam Sandler. Great year.
And some people joined the UN.
Okay. Yeah, Lesotho. I had to do a project on Lesotho. They're landlocked by South Africa on top of a mountain.
All I know is that they're somewhere in Africa. I wouldn't have been able to find them on a map, you know?
If you look at South Africa, there's like, it's hollow. It's like a donut. There's a little circle in the middle of South Africa, and that's Lesotho.
Like the Vatican for Rome kind of thing?
A little bit, yeah. Except there's
not Rome, I'm sorry, for Italy.
It's Lesotho Hall.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, and apparently I was skimming the Wikipedia. There's a bunch of stuff about Rhodesia and a Rhodesian crisis. So great. Yeah, cool. Yeah, war in South Africa.
Gordon Ramsay was also born that year.
Wow.
Gordon Ramsay was born in November.
Gordon Ramsay and Adam Sandler.
And David Schwimmer, if anyone knows who that is.
I guess we probably do. Is he
relevant? We don't want to.
I mean, I don't have anything against David Schwimmer. I mean, did he do anything other than Friends?
Yeah, but nothing that really, that at least from what I'm used to, like nothing that stood out. Sinead O'Connor, also born in 66.
Man.
She passed away like just last year, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Or the year before.
Last year. Yeah. Late last year too. I can't remember the exact date, but it was. I think it was fairly late last year.
Poor Sinead O'Connor.
She got hell for ripping up a picture of the Pope.
Boy.
Yeah, killed her career, unfortunately. July of last year, mid-year. Now on to the deaths. Because I'm still looking at this list.
I started scrolling past the desk, and I was like, oh, man, these are all people who were born in, like, the 19th century.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to know who most of these people are.
Well, the second Prime Minister of South Africa was born in 1901, and he died in 66. So, like, at least there's one from the same century.
Same century. 1901.
Yeah. And there's a couple of young ones who died, too. Like, there's Eric Fleming died in September, and he was born in 1925. So there is still a few young ones, but yeah, most of these are.
Of course, yeah, I was gonna say, well, of course, people do die young, but
yeah, I mean, look at Yeltsin, Chekhov in the remake movies.
Man, we're really.
I like Chekhov, and really I want more Chekhov.
We're ending on a downer note tonight.
People die young. End of episode. Good night.
Oh, Disney died in 66.
No, that's true. Yeah, Walt Disney.
And he still owns everything.
Walt Disney died the same day that this episode aired. December 15th.
That's going to be
the balance. The drop. The balance of terror of Walt Disney's death.
balanced against the Romulans' return and the casualty, the price we had to pay was Walt Disney. They have his head in a cryogenic chamber.
That's a lie. Yes.
Next to Hitler and...
I don't think they have his head in a cryogenic chamber.
Disneyland.
I do think his undead ghost is still running the company.
Okay, that's very likely.
Yeah, I mean, Eisner is basically Disney.
They probably They probably copied his mind into some very primitive, like that guy from World War II computer.
I think
Zola.
Yeah, Zola.
He's not from real World War II. He's from the documentary Captain America.
The documentary about Captain America?
No, the documentary Captain America, Captain America. I'm calling the movie a documentary.
Anton Zola, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a documentary. They have a guy that put his mind in a TV screen in
1955. Yeah. I don't think he used technology. It was more likely dark magic.
Yeah, that's way more likely. Dark mouse magic.
Need to watch episode 9 of season 2 of Strange New Worlds. I want to see the musical episode.
Yeah, go watch it. I mean,
I've only got access to it for a couple of days, so I don't know if I'm gonna get a chance to.
Like, I really think that any episode of that show you can watch. Like, there's a few things that, you know, you might not know what someone's talking about, but I really think that, like, you can watch that show in any order.
Again, I'm gonna lose access to it if I haven't already, so I don't think I can. That's on one of the services. That's on Paramount Plus, which I dropped. Which, by the way, there was something we were asking someone asked about earlier to watch, and it's on Paramount Plus. But I don't have access to it, so I don't know if it's available on your. I don't know if you've got Paramount or what, Koya.
Were we The Hunt for Red October? I have Paramount. That's what we've been. That's what. So that's the one thing. That's the only thing I pay for. That's where.
So that's got Paramount has Hunt for Red October according to the internet.
Oh, okay.
Where's Lost Boys?
The Hunt for Red October.
I will Google. I don't know. I didn't look at that one.
It's more important that you watch Lost Boys.
I don't think so. I've managed to somehow go
God.
Almost my entire life without watching it.
That's like so super classic. That's up there with Interview, I swear to God.
Apparently it's on Amazon and Crave.
Oh shit, well yeah. I got Amazon.
I think I've got Crave for like a little while longer. I don't think my account's quite ended yet. So we dropped that one too because I have too many accounts.
I find myself just watching the same thing over and over. I'm watching fucking House of the Dragon again.
Thank you for listening to The Least Ready Room. Let's talk about the question of the week, which was weird because, I made up a term, which was backdoor adaptation, which is like this, which is like, you know, it's when you have a novel about submarines and you make a TV show about spaceships. It's when you completely change the setting or something like that. And a lot of the discussion that question spawned, it spawned a lot of discussion, including kind of like, you know, what is or is not this type of adaptation, which is, it's a real loose term. It's a real silly term, to be honest. We don't need a specific term. There's not a line you cross where an adaptation becomes so different that it's a different story. Or maybe there is. Maybe it's Over the Garden Wall. So... yeah, anyway, so that was the question. And maybe there was some discussion, so maybe I'll just read like the big paragraph looking answers. And maybe, we'll see. We'll see what I end up reading. Exploded Ed said he can think of two that were done really well. The first being the OG Planet of the Apes. I did not know that was an adaptation. He says that it toned down the technology the apes had for budget reasons, and that the story is better for it. The other one is Knock at the Cabin. It completely changed the ending, but it made a much harder hitting story. And that's interesting. I think that that is based on a comic book, and I'm not going to start talking about the end of that or spoiling that. But yeah, interesting. If the movie is, yeah, much harder hitting, I would like to see. Well, honestly, I would like to read that comic if it's a comic. I would like to. That's a good movie. So yeah, I would like to see whatever it's adapted from, which I think is a comic. Locke says, I really liked the most recent version of The Invisible Man starring Elizabeth Moss. Yeah, very different take on that. Extremely. Although the original Invisible Man was a psychopath, kind of in a different way. I thought it spoke to the terror of abusive partners in a really powerful way, and it does. Speaking of Moss, the first season of Handmaid's Tale is nearly unbearably well done. Neither of these are backdoor adaptations, as it's right in the title, but both are excellent. Yeah, and I don't know if the title needs to be replaced. I mean, that definitely helps. That might even be what I'm trying to say. A backdoor adaptation is when you adapt something and you change it. That might be the line. You change it so much that you have to change the title. But anyway, Locke says that his favorite backdoor adaptation of all time, my favorite of all time in backdoor adaptations is Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. I think, which is maybe a stretch, being more like fanfic than an adaptation of Hamlet. Okay. I agree with what he's saying. Saint242 says, how about Underworld as a backdoor adaptation of The World of Darkness? Which is, yeah, when we get into the discussion, like, what's the line? When do you call it an adaptation and when do you call it just stealing from someone? Because there were a lot of lawsuits back and forth about that, True Blood and Twilight. Yeah, there are a lot of stuff that falls into that category. Not like World of Darkness owns vampires existing. Well, I think that might have been part of the problem, is that White Wolf felt like they owned the idea of vampires existing in the modern age. But I mean, but come on, but Underworld is real close. Yeah, any Blizzard game. Those are the big answers, it looks like. Yes, after that, we began talking about Dracula and Castlevania, and the fact that Dracula, well, obviously is in Castlevania, but the novel Dracula, that story is like something that happened to the Dracula in Castlevania, and it's kind of funny. And the guy in Bloodlines is related to, you know, the man, the bear in the man suit. Anyway, that was the question of the week. It was kind of a continuation from the last question. But, so enough talking about adaptations. The question of the week this week is that you are in a situation where the first thing you think of, because you have encountered an old god, you're in a situation where the first thing you think of is going to show up and destroy the city. How is the city going to be destroyed? Join us on Discord to talk about that, and we will see you next week for the Least Ready Room. Thank you so much.